Hi, my name is Susan. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, I'm from Oakland, California. I'm so grateful to be here today. This workshop, this panel, is the title is A Questioner's and Nonbeliever's Journey to Spiritual Awakening. And thank you for my panel members who have agreed to speak on their experience on their spiritual awakening. And I think we will start from the other end with Lori R. And each of us will have 15 minutes to speak, and then we'll give our big crowd an opportunity to share on their reflections. And I will keep time. Thank you, Lori.
Should I grab this microphone?
Hi, everybody. My name is Lori R. I am a compulsive eater.
Hi.
Hi. Can I start this off with a serenity prayer? Okay. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Just to qualify a little bit, I've been in Sea House since it started, since it rolled over from another program. It was 1996 when it did that. I have not been continuously abstinent for that time. I've been abstinent either 6.5 or 7 years. I have to go back and recheck my food journals. I couldn't find them before I left, but it's either 6.5 or 7 years. And I'm very, very grateful for that abstinence. Yeah, the questioner's and non-believer's journey to a spiritual awakening. I just wrote a little bit, and then I'll just share the rest of it. I'm living proof that as an agnostic member of our sister food program, who was very resistant and critical of most Western forms of religion, I did develop an understanding and belief in a loving and accepting higher power that has definitely guided me in my journey of recovery. I was raised in a strict religious household with 6 older siblings during the 60s and early 70s. There was a religious as well as social, cultural, and sexual revolution occurring in this country at that time. I'm sure people here may remember that. My older siblings went away to college, and most of them either rejected God completely or changed over to a more looser form of the faith. So I had my parents at home who were very, very strict, and I was raised very strict. And my brothers and sisters were raised very strict. And my parents were very involved in the church. And then I had these brothers and sisters coming home on vacation from college saying, there's no God. And I was like, I adored my brothers and sisters, and I was breaking away from my parents, and I didn't know what to do. So eventually, by the time I came along, my parents were like, whatever you want to do, it's okay. By the time I was about 12, I stopped pretty much going to church. And that was God for me. God was, you know, church. God was fearful. God was rules and strict regulations, and there was nothing personal about God to me. I had an eating problem ever since I could remember, and I used to ask God to just get me skinny. I didn't know that, you know, that meant that I had to put the food down, and I never asked for the power to put the food down. I wanted to eat everything I wanted to eat and still look the way I wanted to look. That's what I wanted to do. So that didn't work very well, and I spent a lot of years. It seemed like when I was at least going to church and at least had a nominal faith in something bigger than myself, my life didn't spin out of control the way it did when I let that go. And I became a raging compulsive eater. I mean, I'd been periodic up to that point in time, but I just became raging about the age of 14. Right on through till I was about 23 when I found our sister program. And I was agnostic. And the reason I was agnostic was because I said, well, if there really is a God, I don't want to piss him off. So I'm going to just hang on to the fact that there might really be a God out there, and but I don't really believe in him too much. But I'm holding my final judgment. So that was kind of what I believed in. I stopped going to church, and I kind of ridiculed people that did, because I thought that they were just not worthless, but they didn't know anything. And I liked the people that were cynical and caustic and sarcastic about faith and God and all that stuff. And I came to the program, and I started hearing the 12 traditions in the big book. And God was all over the place. Higher power was... I didn't get the idea of a higher power. I was like, oh, what? And I thought the 12 and 12 was about the strangest thing I'd ever heard in my life. But I kept coming back to meetings because there was something there for me. My eating had gotten better, and my life had gotten somewhat better. I wasn't really working a program. I wasn't really abstinent according to the way they were, but I know things had improved. And at that time, you know, it was a program that, well, you could choose a food plan if you wanted to. You didn't have to. Eventually, I came to glom on to somebody in another 12-step fellowship who had a very strong spiritual connection to God, very, very strong spiritual program. He'd lost everything in his life, and so his program meant everything to him, and his relationship with God meant everything, and I wanted what he had. So we hung out together a lot. It was not the healthiest relationship, but I got a great deal from him, and my life started to get better and better, but I was always seeking God. I was living in a small little town in the mountains in Idaho, and we had a very small group. And some people were very big on the higher power, and some people weren't. Some people were big on going to lots of meetings, working with your sponsor, and you know, you just stay away from your first whatever. So I didn't have people to walk me through the big book except for my friend Charlie. And I had a relapse with my eating disorder, and I ended up going to treatment down here in Southern California. And I was talking to the psychiatrist one day, and I said, you know, I think that I've got a problem. I don't really have a God in my life. And he said, well, that's not what you need. And he said, that's nice, but that's for later. You need to figure out this problem and this problem and this problem. So I got worse and worse and worse and worse. And I went through some terrible times. Back in 1984, I moved back to the little town that I was that I lived in Idaho. And I found these wonderful, wonderful people who were in our grandfather program. And they walked me through the big book. They took me through the big book. They underlined things. They showed me what to read. People weren't wanting to be around me much at that time. So they said, take this big book, go home and read this thing. And I said, okay. So I slowly and slowly and slowly began to see that I couldn't get out of people what I was always looking for from a higher power. And that's what I was always trying to do. I was always trying to get from you or you or you something that would make me feel secure, something that would calm my anxiety, something that would stop the eating, something that would make people like me. And the big book at that time had all my answers. So I read the first 164 pages over and over and over, and my life got better and better and better. And I'd love to say that was the end of the story, but that same sponsor had also joined a somewhat of a cult. And he came to disbelieve in God and told me I should do the same thing a few years down the road. And I was like so addicted to my sponsor, I did that. My life took a turn for the worse again. It's black and white for me. Every time that I abandon my higher power, he doesn't abandon me, but I abandoned him, my life goes down the tubes. And every time I pick it back up again, things get much better. So I learned how to have a God of my understanding, and I learned that it was a loving God, and that part is taking me a long time, the loving God part, because I believe that God is not only deep down within me, but I believe he's outside of me as well. So I pray to God as I don't understand him sometimes, as that's what I call him. And I heard that term in a meeting, and I said, well, that's perfect for me. So I do work the steps on a daily basis, the first three steps especially. And I get down on my knees every morning, and I say my prayers, and I go over what I'm powerless over, not just food, but everything, the people, the places, the things. And as long as I can stay close to my higher power and have that connection, I seem to do okay. If I start to think that, well, this is more important or that's more important, I haven't done my 10-step for the last 2 days. It doesn't feel very good, just because I've been busy being at the convention and the conference. I need that time with my higher power. I really do. And I love what the big book says. It says, be quick to see where religious people are right, make use of what they offer. And I've learned to do that in this program. So I don't care what religion or denomination or sect or philosophy you have, you might have something that I need to hear, so I'm going to open my ears up to what you've got to say. And I hear it, you know, on the radio, in a meeting, from talking to people at a coffee shop, whatever. That stuff is everywhere out there. And so that's what I try to do. And is my time up?
No. Not
too bad. Yeah. Okay.
6 minutes.
Could my time please be up? I don't want to bore these people. So I've also rejoined the church of my childhood. I'd wanted to for a long, long, long time. But I can remember, I wasn't physically well enough to get to church for a long time. I can remember I was living in Long Beach, and I would see the spires of the church. They were 6 blocks away from where I lived, and I could see it from my balcony. I could not physically get there. And one day, I took my wheelchair out for a stroll because I was feeling better, and I wound up at the doors of that church. And I had no intention of being there. I didn't even know how I got there. But there I was, and they were having a service. It was on a Sunday. And I just asked the usher, I said, can I stay back here? He goes, you can go all the way to the front. That's for the handicapped. I said, oh, no, I'll just stay right here. Thank you. So I started doing that, and then I said, well, that was pretty good. I like that. And I went back again, and I went back again, and I started going regularly. And I did talk to a priest about, in my particular faith, you have to do confession before you can start taking communion again. So I did talk to a priest about that. And I'm at another little turning point with that faith, and I have to, when I go back home, I've been putting off talking to my priest about it, but whatever. However, this program is first for me, because if I don't have this program, I don't have my contact with God. If I don't have my abstinence, I can go to church all I want, and it's going to be an empty experience. And I can say that because I've experienced that. So program is first. I go to church about 50% of the time. Sometimes I simply don't feel well enough to go. And sometimes I've got a lot of things packed in that day, and I'm not going to be able to tend to my abstinent meals and get to church, so church loses for that day. And in the wintertime, we had a really hellacious winter. I live in Ohio. And the priest even put in the bulletin, please, if you have trouble getting out of the house, stay home. Do not come to church. It is not a sin. So I opted for that a few times. But I have a very, very loving church where I am, and our priest is wonderful. But as I said, it's my spirituality comes from these rooms, and that's where I learned it. And that's where I continue to grow with it. And I know that if I want to continue to grow, as it tells me I must in the big book, or else I'm going to go backwards and die, I have to continue working the steps. And you know, I have little God incidences that happen in my life all the time. It's really proof for me that my higher power exists, and gratitude is another thing. If I make a gratitude list every single day, and doesn't, you know, I used to always have to be at night, but now it's like whenever I can get it in, I do it. That really fills me up, and it stops my envy, it stops my jealousy, it stops my self-pity, it stops my depression. It stops my negativity, and I didn't learn to do a gratitude list any place but in these rooms. So for today, I'm very, very grateful to be here, grateful that I volunteered to do this. Susan didn't ask me, I volunteered. And grateful to everybody who's here today. Thanks. The microphone's right here, honey. Can you feel
okay.
it?
Okay, yeah. Okay, I don't want to knock over my water. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Suzanne. I'm a grateful compulsive eater.
Hi, Suzanne.
And so this is for doubters and questioners. And just to qualify, I've been in these rooms since April 6th of 2003. And it has been a journey. It has been inside of the Seha rooms that all the little things in my life have come together spiritual-wise. When I was born, I had a couple of birth defects that were apparent, and my parents belonged to a religious institution from their origins, from their family. And my father and mother felt that they were shunned because of my birth defects, and it angered and disappointed my father, maybe even more than my mother, but both were disappointed, and they turned away from organized religion. And growing up, my mother thought it would be good that I went to some organized religion, so I would go with my neighbors. You know, one Sunday I'd go with my friend across the street, another Sunday I'd go down to another city to an institution with my neighbors down the street, and that neighbor was a very good example of her faith, and my father and mother were very good friends with her, so I would go with them a lot. I also would go to other, so I had like a variety of spiritual institutions, shall we, religious institutions. And that was fine. But the one thing growing up that bothered me as a child, personally and as a, for the world as a whole, many of them, not all of them, many of them said, if you are not a member of this religious institution, you're not going to heaven. Or they would say, or worse yet, they would say, if you are not a member of this institution, you're going to hell. And even as a small child, I just felt that that was not fair, very cruel, and I questioned that a lot. Even though at some of these institutions I felt at home, that part really bothered me. When my father died when I was 9 and a half, my brother converted to another religion, and he was older than I was, and when he would come home from the Air Force to visit, he would take me to this institution. And once again, I was shunned a lot. And I did not convert to his religion for a number of reasons, but that was one of them. So, you know, once again, I'm on my own little spiritual path as a 10, 11, 12-year-old. So when I was 13, my mother took me to Mexico to live, and that was a whole other a spiritual path that really helped shape me into the person who I am on a number of levels, but also my spiritual journey that got me into CA Hal. And without that spiritual journey, it may have been a lot harder to get here. I won't say impossible, but it would have been harder. So as a teenager, I was lucky that I had a few friends of various nationalities that were very intellectual and yet had common sense and analytical, and we would really openly discuss spirituality and religion, but more so spirituality. And since, I must say this, my father was a perfectionist, right? And so he had a daughter with, it turned out to have multiple disabilities. It was, in a sense, ego reduction for him without a 12-step program. Yet I never felt that my father felt that I was lesser than, but I know that it was very apparent he was a perfectionist. And my mother said, thank God he had you, because it really helped him with his issue of being perfect. So the idea of being perfect, you know, inside of CA Hal, I realized that I was an inconsistent perfectionist. You know, I pick and choose what I'll be perfect about. I can't even be perfect about being a perfectionist, right? I failed on that one too. So, or maybe I triumphed over it. I don't know. Maybe that was a good thing. But so at age 15, 16, 17, 18, I was questioning if my higher power is perfect, then why aren't we? What happened along the way? And so we would have a lot of discussions on the whys and the hows, which I will not get into here because this may not be the appropriate place. But I came to understand that, you know, higher power, whatever your image or thought or name for him, he, she, it is, that that is perfection. But we are here on this earthly realm, not in a spiritual realm. You know, we have to seek our spirituality. It's not, we're not born with it. We have to seek it. It's like program, you know. We have to actively want it and reach for it. Well, I think spirituality is the same thing, in my opinion. So we have to seek it. So why, you know, same old question, then why are we not perfect? And why is the world not perfect? Well, you know what, maybe nature in itself is perfect. I know some people use nature as a higher power. And some people may say, well, that's not perfect. Look at all the destruction it does. Well, you know, maybe we look at it as destruction, but maybe that's part of the cycle of nature, right? So for us, since we live on this earthly plane and not in a, we're not born in a spiritual plane, this is part of our perfection in our higher power's vision of us. We are perfect. We are perfect in the way we are in the spiritual realm, maybe, but not on a human level, and they kind of have to catch up with each other. I don't know if that makes much sense, but I had to really just come to terms that it is what it is, and I'll never be perfect in my idea of perfection. And along the way, I had a great spiritual teacher who taught me a lot about non-traditional religion, and perhaps not really here in the Western world, elsewhere. And I really learned I don't have to be perfect and I don't have to strive to be perfect, that I am not defective. God did not make me defective. This is part of my journey to be a better self, a better spiritual person, and I'm not lesser than, and this is just part of my spiritual journey. And what I can strive for is excellence. That perfectionism is just another ism, right? It's just another addiction, another thing to work on. But I can work for excellence. So it was along this time that I was struggling with my weight again. And someone 12-stepped me into another 12-step program for food in another country. And, you know, because I had been trying to do it on a spiritual basis with the help of my spiritual counselor, and we tried several things, and it just did not work. You know, it just did not work. And I was still questioning, you know, where does this all fit in for me? You know, I always had, I will say this, I always had a loving God. I always believed God was loving. I did not think God was punishing. But how does this all fit in for me on a personal level? I could be very optimistic for the rest of the world and for you and for everyone else, but not so much for me. As a child, I was, and somehow along the way, I kind of lost that as my addiction progressed. So once again, you know, with the help of my spiritual teacher, I questioned, so how does this all fit in for me on a personal level? I get it. But I still was searching and trying to put it all together when someone 12-stepped me into the other program in another country. And so when I walked into the rooms, you know, I saw the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. There was a photograph, believe it or not, of Dr. Bob and Bill. And I kind of got it. I'm a foodaholic. But it was still, you know, and I was working this, I was studying the spirituality side. And my very first sponsor said, you can't do that. It's either 12 traditions or, you know, that's it. You cannot do that, because she was confusing where it says we don't, you know, we don't have religious doctrine or political ideology and all that. And I had to go to someone else who started this program. And she said, oh, no. You're just fine. They can coincide. In fact, each will enhance the other. Your understanding will get better. You're on the right track. So I felt better about that. And my spiritual teacher at the time thought it was great that I was in a 12-step program. He really supported me. And he said, you will really come to understand more and accept whatever you want to call your higher power. So in 1998, I came back to this country for eye surgery and to the area that I'm from, Los Angeles, and had eye surgery. And it was a large part. Well, you know what? I was 50% of my spiritual practice with my teacher and 50% of what I had learned in the rooms down there in another country. That before my surgery, I did not have a good feeling about the surgery. And I remember calling another spiritual person that I really respected, and he said, you are a beloved child of God. And I said, yes, I am. And he said, but you're nobody special. And what's going to happen is going to happen. It has to be God's will and acceptance. And even though I was really nervous, I thought, you know what? I have to surrender this. So when I found out that I had lost my eyesight, I felt sorry for the poor resident that didn't know what to do with me after, you know, the next day after the surgery. I was not angry. I was not questioning, why me? Why me? I did not do that. And I remember one of my doctors said, I think you're in denial. And the other doctor said, no, she has acceptance. And she surrendered. And I wondered at the time if he was one of us, but I couldn't ask. But, you know, I did question, what do I do with this? And I remember when the doctor told me that I was not probably ever going to see again, probably. He said, yeah, you know, maybe at some point you will. And if there was anyone who was going to see, it might be you. Because of your attitude. But my first thought was, I'll never get married. And my second thought was, how am I going to care for my mother when she's older? It was not about me. And so there were times that I was frustrated. I get frustrated. I have been frustrated. But you know what? I have to roll with what God has given me. So when I came into, so I had 5 years on my own because I lost my abstinence a couple of weeks after I went blind. I went blind abstinently, I will say that. And I had 5 years on my own. looking for a structured and disciplined approach because that's what I need. You know, my mom brought me up to be very independent, which has served me very well up to a point. And then I knew that I had discipline and structure for other things in my life or for other people or for other things, other organizations. But when it came to me personally, I did not have it. So when I came to see how I had 5 years on my own, I really had the gift of desperation. So coming in to see how I had all these things, but I still was questioning, how does this work for me on a personal level? How do I put it all together where I am fine with my religious or spiritual belief and be okay with other spiritual beliefs? And it has been here working with a sponsor who is of a different belief. Some of my sponsees are. You know, some of my sponsees call the higher power the bigger power. I have one that calls him his higher self. It doesn't matter. In these rooms, I have come to experience and understand that all the roads lead to spirituality and a higher power. I don't have to impose my belief on someone else. And it's okay. It is even okay if someone else's belief thinks their belief is the only way. It doesn't matter. I can accept anyone's belief. I don't have to be judgmental. I can embrace and learn from other people's beliefs. So when I came in, I was questioning, so does this work on for me? And as I worked the steps, and it took me a long time to work my steps, and the person here can attest to that. There was actually a little joke like, yeah, sure, it took you long enough. But I had reasons, you know, it was harder for me. But you know what? That was my part of my journey too. And as because it took me longer, I really, really, really have a God of my understanding that works for me. And that's okay. It may not be anyone else's God, but it's my God. And I have really, really, really come to understand I have to turn everything completely over to my higher power. Everything, my life, my food, my thoughts, my imperfections. Oh, there's that word again, perfectionism. I have to. And when I do, my life works. My life works. I have come to accept that I do not well with big changes. I have had some big changes recently and have some coming up. And I continue to uncover and discover and discard. And it's only here that I know God has always taken care of me. And I have to say, I've had some close calls with death. And God has never abandoned me. How am I doing on time?
30 seconds?
Okay. So God has never abandoned me. I just always couldn't see it because I was in the addiction. And now and hear and say how it has all come together that I totally believe I've totally turned myself over to the care of God. And I can learn from other people's belief systems without judgment and with an open heart and with open arms. And I have a lot of love. And I have a lot of love for you. And thank you for allowing me to share.
My name is Michelle, and I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Thank you, Susan, for asking me. I've been in this program a really long time, and this is the first time I ever got to speak at the convention. And just to qualify, I've been abstinent since February 2011. And it's 16 and a half pounds from my top from what I thought that I weighed, you know. I'm really nervous, and a non-believer's journey to a spiritual awakening. And it could be in little things, because I was sitting outside there, and, you know, I've been really uncomfortable because I've been trying to figure out what's wrong with my left eye, and I was sitting there, and a girl that I met yesterday from the phone bridge that I knew her voice, but I never knew what she looked like, walked by and walked over to me and said, "Here are some flowers. It matches your dress. I think you deserve them." And it's like, I can, if I'm abstinent, I can see these little things that I couldn't see if I was eating, you know, and these are all little teeny examples, you know, of God shots. And when I came into this program, you know, in the early 1800s, no, it just seems like, you know, 1979, it just seems like, you know, forever. And I was, you know, a small child and not so small, but I grew, you know, I was Jewish when I, you know, grew up. I didn't believe in God, and I surely didn't think I had a loving one, and I couldn't stay abstinent. And if I couldn't find a God, I really couldn't stay abstinent because I really didn't trust in a higher power, especially one that was going to actually help me, because all these people had died in my life. And for the longest time, first there was, you know, this one girl, and she said, "You can borrow my God." So for 2 years, I called her every day, and we never said the words, "Hi, how are you?" because it would have led into, "Oh, God, I'm so miserable. You know, I just want to just complain about everything," and she would do the same. We never said, "Hi, how are you?" I said, "Can I borrow your God today?" And she said, "Yes." Because she told me she had a loving God, and I certainly needed someone else's God because she was abstinent and mine really wasn't working. So I called her every day and borrowed her God. We said the third step prayer and we said the seventh step prayer. And after 2 years, she told me she couldn't do it anymore. And then I found somebody else and I asked them if I could call her every day. So first off, it counts as an outreach call, right? So I would call her. And I would say, "Can I borrow your God?" And we did that until she moved from the West Side to the Valley and told me it was a long distance and that she needed to make local calls, you know, for people that were in the Valley. And I was like, "Are you kidding me?" You know, anyway. By that point, it had already been three straight years of me borrowing someone else's God, and I started to trust that I had a God. And I forgot to mention that in the beginning when I came into the program, they just said to me, as long as it's anything outside of yourself. So I would get down on my knees and I used a plant. You know, I would pray to a plant, and that was my higher power, and that was my God. And then after that, when the plant stopped working, they told me to use the people in the room. They were abstinent. So I would get down on my knees every morning and say the first three steps, and I would use everybody in this room as my higher power. And then what started happening, which is what somebody else said, you know, I would call sponsors like 20, 30, 40 times a day because, of course, I didn't trust in anything in myself. You know, she could attest to it. And because I thought she was my higher power. And nobody is my higher power because, you know, she's not going to be there. She's busy. She's sleeping. She has to leave the house, you know, and I'd be hysterical. So I always did better when I was like in Costa Rica and couldn't use a cell phone or was on a cruise and I couldn't call because I knew I had a God. And I hope I'm not so terrible because they're leaving. But anyway, so that made me realize that when I came back into town that I couldn't use the rooms as a higher power, I couldn't use the meetings as a higher power, that I had to have my own higher power. And I have my own higher power now. And so, you know, that's like the topic, a non-believer's journey. I mean, I really came in, I didn't believe. And what's really important to me is I was sort of surprised that there weren't more people in this panel because if I can't, you know, maintain a spiritual program in a life, I really can't stay abstinent because, I mean, on my own, I really can't stay abstinent. And, you know, I'm the religion that I grew up in. I don't practice it, but it's in my heart. And there used to be this holiday every year where we wouldn't be able to eat, you know, and I could never get through that holiday because I would always binge, you know. And now being abstinent, when that holiday comes, I no longer do that fasting because for me, my abstinence is my... I'm doing this all year round. I don't have to wait till once a year to do that fast and then be nasty and bad and, you know, and everything all year round, you know. So I don't do that anymore. I don't fast on that holiday anymore. If I could stay abstinent, that's my, you know, I'm doing it. And, you know, I'm hypoglycemic. I'm on a medical food plan. And for the last couple of years, you know, well, first of all, when I hooked up with this guy that became my husband that I'm now divorced from, he had said to me, I really can't be around you. I really need to teach you how to meditate, you know, and I really needed to learn how to meditate. And he taught me how to meditate. And, you know, and I don't do it that way anymore. I mean, that was TM then. I've done breathing meditation. You know, now I chant. You know, I practice Buddhism now, and I chant for 20 minutes, like, twice a day. And whatever it is, whatever you're doing, anything to get out of myself and to just think positive thoughts, because, God, this is like, I've been going through some, I guess we all have our health issues. You know, like a month ago, my eyes started getting really glassy, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And then it just looked like it had like this huge bubble in it and was yellow. And it started almost covering like the brown circle, you know, and I started going to different doctors and they gave me, you know, drops and this and that, and each doctor would refer me to somebody else. Well, this is all frightening itself. Like, each doctor can't figure it out, and then they refer to you somebody else. So when it came down to last week getting the MRI, I always had this fear of a brain tumor. So it was probably a good thing that I had to have this MRI because, you know, these little fears can kill us. You know, so I had to go in this tube and for 30 minutes. And do you know that I meditated the whole time? Because there's no way that I could. I mean, first of all, it's really loud. It felt like it was I was on a construction site. But I was terrified. And when I got out of the doctor's appointment, before I went to the MRI, someone from Oregon who came, who's sitting here, staying at my house for a week. So I had parked, she went to a meeting, and I walked to my appointment. I came out, I had 15 minutes, and I walked to the meeting. And I raised my hand, and they called on me, so I got 15 minutes of the meeting. And then I said, we need to go pick up our lunch, because, you know, we can't go home now. We have to go sit and wait there for a couple of hours. So we pick up our lunch, she gets to eat hers. As soon as we sit down, they said, you're going to have to wait, like, all day. Someone called and canceled. They took me right away. Never got to eat my lunch until, like, 2:30. But that was a God shot. So if I stay abstinent, these are all little spiritual experiences. And, it, you know, it's like if something bad's going to happen, it's going to happen. So I could tell you that, but I have to call you for you to tell me that. There's no sense of me worrying for the whole week that something bad's going to happen, that I'm going to die or I have a brain tumor or something. So that's why we make outreach calls. And so it ended up that they said the brain was good, but so they eliminated one more thing, but now they still don't know what it is. So come back on Monday and we'll give you an injection in your eye and see if that, you know. And so it's just like, but everything that I do, I'm being proactive, and I couldn't be doing any of those things, trust me, unless I had, you know, was working a spiritual program, because for the longest time, for what I do for a living, you know, I wake up at like 5 and I get home really late, and I'm, you know, working, you know, like 17-hour days. So all my doctor's appointments and dentist appointments accumulated because I was working on project after project over the last couple of years. So now it's enabled me to take care of all these doctor's appointments, which when I was eating, they never got taken care of. So how many minutes?
Just under 5.
Okay, so I try to live the most spiritual life to the best of my ability, which, you know, I talk to God and I get down on my knees in the morning, and I just went down to my car to meditate for a couple of minutes before I came up here because I was like really scared to death. And I have live meetings. I live in LA, and I do I am really involved in phone bridge meetings because I've had, I mean, how it started was, is, you know, bronchitis, you know, a couple of times, you know, twice in a year, or surgeries or whatever. But when, with what I do for a living, you know, I can't get to live meetings during the week, so I could do phone bridge meetings. And so I chair a Wednesday night meeting. And they're all studies, so it's really important for me to do book studies, any kind of studies in the book, big book, 12 and 12. So, you know, I chair Wednesday night, as Bill sees it, meeting, and Thursday once a month as a maintenance meeting, you know, on the phone bridge, you know, when I go to live meetings. And, you know, I sponsor two girls. I have a sponsor. And I have to really tell you, you know, just the, it's like people would say to me, well, I'm abstinent. And I say, abstinence is a tool. If I'm just abstinent and not doing anything else, I'm dry. So that's why I'm crazy. That I really, you know, and it's no excuse for me. I mean, just because I got abstinent in live meetings, that if I'm on the road or if I'm working long hours, I don't get to say, oh, I couldn't get to meetings, I was on vacation, or I couldn't get to meetings, you know, I worked, you know, 17 hours every day. I will do phone bridge meetings. I mean, it's not an excuse. So, you know, that's just what I do. And I'm really grateful to be here, and that I got to go to the lunch, and that I got to meet all these people that I never knew what they looked like from the phone bridge, because I could recognize them by their voice now. And yeah, you know, I hate what's going on. It's like I could half see out of my left eye. It hurts. It feels like every night I want to take contact lenses out and I don't have them in. It's giving me headaches. You know, I can't watch even more than an hour of TV every day. I mean, my eyes tired. I just have to trust that God has a plan, and that eventually, because I was reading on the internet, oh my God, it could really scare you when you go on and Google WebMD. It's really not good. So, you know, I'm just grateful for my program, and that, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, it's harder to come here not abstinent. You know, I really think those people have a lot of courage. And because I kept coming here and I kept slipping, you know, and people kept looking at me and going, you look great. And I kept going, I hate you. I'd walk away going like this because the tape can't hear me. And cry going, they don't understand because I look fine and I can't stop eating or miserable. So that's, you know, I got involved in the phone bridge meeting then too, because people couldn't see what I looked like, you know. And you know, I'm involved in a lot of service, you know. I time on a Thursday, and, you know, I chair two meetings, one every week and the other one once a month. And I just, you know, just do what I can, but that keeps me here and abstinent. And if I'm not constantly praying, I'm constantly obsessing and miserable and thinking you're out to get me because you didn't respond the way I thought you should respond. And I said I'm free tomorrow. My boyfriend just didn't say, wow, that's so wonderful. I'm coming over with flowers. You know, I got an okay, and I was thinking, okay? What does that mean? You know, it's like I'm so insecure. I want you to reassure me every second. Well, you know, that's not going to happen. So it has to come from God, you know, and I really have to have a higher power and a God on my side, working like 24 hours a day. Anyway, it's done. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Susan. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hey, Susan.
I'm from Oakland, California, and really grateful for this opportunity to share on something that's really important to me. The true title, which didn't get translated in the printed material, is The Questioner's and Nonbeliever's Journey to a Spiritual Awakening. And that's something that when it comes up in meetings, when I hear people talking about very firmly base their spiritual program, very firmly based in a religious program, I feel the need to speak up to my experience, which is one of rejecting anything that was associated with a religion. And essentially for me, everything spiritual was associated with a religion. So it was contempt prior to investigation for me. And that prevented me from having recovery for decades. I first heard about 12-step recovery for food in the early 80s. And I went to my first meetings, and I absolutely believed that this was the only answer for me. And I continued to go to meetings for 14 years, around that, but could not find my way to the spiritual understanding, which meant I could not find my way to true recovery. And at the end of those 14 years, I realized, you know, my definition of absence was essentially three meals a day and no sugar, and I kept on not being abstinent when life got in the way, you know, or food spoke to me or whatever it was. And I was going to meetings, but essentially I was just going to meetings for sort of a complaining support group. And, you know, it just, it wasn't, I knew that it, you know, I wasn't making, I wasn't, it wasn't recovery. And so I left and I went into the food for 9 years. And I was in the food. I was doing my research some more. And I had lost hope. I had really lost hope. I just figured I was going to keep on gaining weight, and eventually my health was going to, you know, deteriorate. The one thing I had was exercise. And I very clearly said to myself and to other people when the opportunity offered itself that I was, that was the one thing I was willing to do, was to exercise to at least have some control of my weight. And what was happening was, you know, I had chronic pain from all this exercising I was doing, and I knew that there was going to be a point where I could no longer exercise. I was going to hurt myself to the point where I couldn't exercise anymore. And the small voice that perhaps was my higher power said, and I barely heard it, but said, and you know what's going to happen? You're going to not just gain weight from not exercising anymore, you're going to start eating more because you're so freaked out and you have nothing to control your weight, and it's just going to, it's going to escalate. And I think that small voice is what prepared me for hearing about 12-step food recovery, where there were real boundaries, where it's weighed and measured, no flour, no sugar recovery and food plan. It wasn't See How that I first came to where I really found my recovery, but it's a very similar parallel program. And I was desperate enough to act as if I believed that the recovery I saw in other people's faces and their eyes and their stories was possible for me. I acted as if I believed that there was a higher power that could work for me. I didn't really believe it, but I acted as if I believed it. I saw people who had lost significant amounts of weight and kept it off for years. And that was really important to me, kept it off for years. And, you know, another piece of 12-step program that was important to me was the fact that nobody was gaining, benefiting, you know, from my misery and from my attempts to get a handle on my food issues. So I just did what other people did, what was working for them. I had a sponsor who was so strict, oh my goodness, controlled everything about my life. And she had a belief in a higher power who she called God. And that was really hard for me. And the literature that we used in this other program was very Christian-based, and that was hard for me. But I wanted that recovery. I had some hope. And so I just did it. And I've come to see that doing the program as it was presented to me, even though I didn't get it, even though I didn't fully believe in it, was holding the place for me until I got it, until I understood in here how to make it work, how to understand it. So it was very much an external sort of experience, but I did it. And I was abstinent that first meal, and it was like, oh my God, there's a beginning and an end. This feels fabulous. I mean, I didn't know how to stop eating. I did not know how to stop. I had no off. And I just, you know, I used that phone. I absolutely was committed to committing my food for the day and sticking to it. This other program, they said, you know, your meals happen at specific times with specific times in between your meals. And I stuck to that, and I needed all those pieces. And another piece of the suggestions was to get on my knees every morning and every night and, you know, say please in the morning and thank you in the night. And I was not raised in any kind of faith. I'm culturally Jewish, and Jews don't do knees. But I did it. And I didn't know what I was, you know, it was more of an acting as if. But what started happening to me was this very gradual spiritual awakening. And where it started was this, like, moment that was, like, that long, a breath, where I felt like something had been lifted off my shoulders. And it felt really good. And those moments started happening at times. And then they got a little longer and a little more frequently. And I started recognizing that this was something that felt really good, so I wanted more of it, and this was a spiritual awakening. And I just, you know, it just built from there. And I came to see that my head, and I identify more fully as an addict than just a compulsive eater, but I am certainly a compulsive eater, the addict mind was the part that was hurting me. And what I asked of myself was to move that energy from my head, that thinking. If I can control it, then it somehow was going to work my way and I could control my life. And to move that energy into my heart space. And I had that visual where my higher power was in my heart, in my heart space. That's where the energy of recovery was for me. And I had a sponsor who suggested to me that in my meditation, I do a breathing meditation and see that as a way to connect to my higher power. And that became a very powerful tool for me, that my breath is my way to reconnect with my higher power. And over time, I have developed an understanding of a higher power that speaks to me, that guides me, that is the central force in my life, around which each day is built and my life moves forward. It's beyond my wildest dreams that this is who I am today, that I have a higher power that is this important to me. And the gifts are, you know, the promises that we often read at meetings and is in the Big Book. When I heard them in my early days of 12-step recovery, they just sounded like fantasy words. You know, it's like, oh, those are nice words, and I don't see how it's possible. And today, I see them true in my life. Every single one of those promises has come true and continue to get bigger and deeper. I found my way to see how March of last year, and I am so grateful for the transition to see how the way we work the steps in this program has really enhanced my spiritual growth and the deepening of my recovery. And what I got to do today, I flew down. I'm just flying down for the day. I fly back up tonight. And the plane flight was late, and, you know, it's out of my control, and yet I have these expectations. My plane is going to take off at this time. It's going to land at this time. I'm going to be at the convention at this time, and now it's not. And what I was able to do was say, you can meditate, and you can talk to your higher power, and you can just get centered, and you can be grateful. And that was something. I went back to work a year ago, and I started meditating on the train ride into work. And it was, you know, I mean, there's, you know, the announcements are happening and the people are crowding and sometimes I don't have a seat and I'm meditating while I'm standing up. And it's been such a powerful thing that I was able to do on the plane as well today, where I open my heart and I'm grateful for all the people that are a part of the system that fly the plane, that drive the train, that make the schedules happen, that load the plane up, you know, all the people around us. Some of us are anxious and some of us are, you know, just, we do it all the time. And just having that open heart is such a fabulous experience that I never had in my life before I had this recovery. You know, another thing that happened as a result of committing to my abstinence and my recovery is I had paralyzing public speaking anxiety coming into the previous program. And there was something that said to me, if you work this program, that's going to change. And I desperately wanted it to change. And I had, up to that point, had no way of figuring out how to stop that anxiety. And over time, it has shifted. And prior to going back to work a year ago, I started actually taking acting classes and then going on auditions and then going to very small video and movie and commercial shoots. And, you know, I mean, that's like 0 to 120, and it's amazing. And, you know, and it was first just standing up at the front of the room and reading the printed stuff and being paralyzed even just with reading off a piece of paper. And then, you know, I got to the point where I could share my experience, strength, and hope at a meeting and being so scared but doing it anyway. Somebody said, you know, that's your ego talking. Just let your higher power, you know, let your higher power speak through you. And, you know, having that practice and learning that trust and learning that surrender of this isn't about me. This is about recovery. This is about speaking to the person that needs to hear whatever it is that is going to come out of my mouth. And, you know, it wasn't until I had some recovery that I saw how much anxiety ruled my life. And medical anxiety is another thing that was awful for me from being a little kid, just getting, you know, inoculations. I would just freak out, cry, you know, tense up. And that was my experience well into adulthood, just until I had recovery, that, you know, I was so fearful of the pain, I'd tense up and it would be even worse. And with my spiritual recovery, I was able to learn how to pray, to surrender, to trust, to believe that even if it were to hurt, it's going to be okay. And to also be able to ask for help, to say, you know, I do have anxiety. Can you hold my hand? And, you know, what a gift to be able to ask for help. I just have less than a minute. You know, just being grateful, you know, finding gratitude in every moment, being grateful for the things that I can't, without recovery, I can't see as anything worthy of gratitude. Being able to shift that addict thinking of this sucks to what's another way to think about this? You know, right now my husband is in my mind, and, you know, I can turn things into a negative about the way he responds to the world very easily. And what recovery has allowed for me, what my spiritual awakening has allowed for me, is to say, what is it that's blessed in this person, in the way he sees the world? And what did I fall in love with? And to remind myself of that instead of looking at it negatively. You know, negative thinking is a large part of my disease. So that is my time. I will stop. And thank you. Thank you. We actually have just shy of a half hour for people to speak on their reflections. Again, it's the questioners and non-believers' journey to a spiritual awakening is the topic. And if you want to speak, it is being recorded, so we do ask that you sign your name here. And I think we'll say 5-minute shares, and who would like to talk?
Hi, my name is Sonia, and part of the convention, like just being here, is this is my first time, and I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic.
Hi, Sonia.
And this is like the best thing that I could have come to this meeting because I can hear people talking from both sides. I have ADHD, and I just want to go over there and tell them to be quiet. So. I had to think about not complaining while in the meeting of not complaining and practice humility and surrender my higher power. And this was a good learning lesson because I'm learning to tune into my body, which I've never done before. I'm learning to recognize what is the emotion that is triggering my anxiousness or that's triggering me to want to get up and run. And because I would do that. And now I am learning through my higher power that if I just stay put for a minute, a second and a half, and try to tune into my body and see what it is, that fear goes away. That is a miracle. I've been running away from fear for so long. And I know that it's false evidence appearing to be real. I know that. But it's a blessing that I can sit here, be abstinent, and share this with not only you guys, but other people that hopefully feel the same way as I do. I am grateful to have the opportunity to be in a group of people that are practicing to surrender, that are practicing to be grateful, that are practicing to be of service, mm-hmm. and that are being loving and gentle is what I hope. And I hope that I can do that too. I have a problem with the voices in my head that say, run, go away, try this, do that. And when I acknowledge those voices, I can say, oh, those are my ego-based thoughts, or those are my so-and-so things. I've done all the religions. Because that's my obsessive compulsiveness. And the one thing that I know is that they all speak of a higher, greater than ourselves, regardless of what that religion is. And they say, all the religions that I've read about say, give to others, be kind to one another, love one another, and that is what I know of religions. And if I take that from all the religions that I've, because I've been confused for a long time and I didn't know how to do that, if I take those, that brings it to see hell as well, because that's what we do here. We practice to surrender. We practice to give service. We try to be peaceful and loving to one another. And we hope that through our experience, strength, and hope, that somebody will do that for us as well when we are, you know, down in the dump, let's say, you know, because we all get to that point. It doesn't matter how long, I believe, you've been here or not. Or else why would people continue coming, right? I mean, why would they come if there's no graduation, obviously somebody has to learn something from somebody else. And so I'm just grateful today to be blessed to have my patience be tested by learning to be aware that I don't have to do everything that my ego tells me to do. I'm grateful that I have other people that can relate to me in these thoughts that I say out loud, that they don't look at me like, huh, are you crazy? You know, because I used to think that if I had these thoughts, somebody would commit me. I really did. And but now I know that in these places, people go, oh, yeah, that's what it is. And, you know, I'm like, oh, that's a good note to take. So I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful to continue to be in this program because it gives me self-worth. I've learned self-worth in this program. I cry for tears of joy now. So I'm thankful. Thank you for letting me share.
Avi Compulsivita.
Hi, Avi.
I just want to say thank you so much, ladies. It was really great to hear you and what you had to share on this topic. When I first came into program, I thought I did have the idea that you were a bunch of God botherers and Bible bashers. That's what I thought in my head, and that it was a little bit of a religious cult. And it wasn't until I kind of got into program a little deeper that I realized it wasn't about that. And that it was more about an individual's journey, but it took me a long time to get there. I felt like I've always struggled with my spiritual journey. I actually happen to have a cousin that's a monk in Cyprus, and I went to see him a couple of years ago. It's very hard to see him because women are not allowed in there, and you've got to like schedule a certain time. And so I actually got to see him after about 10 years of him being a monk, and he came down and I got to chat with him in the special room that where females are allowed. And I just was so intrigued about him and who he was and how he found his spiritual path. And it was very funny that he actually gave me a book saying, Struggling with Your Spirituality. I have to be honest, I've only read like, not even the first chapter. Mm-hmm. But I would look at other people in program and they were so strong in their own faiths. And I thought I had to be like them. So that's why I felt like I really struggled in program, because the word God for me is just a word, and it's not something I believe in, that word. So there's something that I struggle with. I don't go to an organized place. I don't go to a building. So there was another issue there, where some people in program just feel, you know, they're so in their faith, which I think is wonderful, and I wanted to be like them. I thought there was something wrong with me because I'm not like you, or I'm not like you, or you in the room, where you feel so strong in your faith and where you come from. And I thought, wow, I'm just like a fish out of water. And it wasn't until recently that it was actually my sponsor said to me that, but you are on your spiritual path, don't you recognize that? So it really took me a long time to even realize or recognize that I have my own thoughts and my own faith. It doesn't have to be what you have or what some book says. And of course, I really related to the agnostic chapter in the Blue Book. So I feel like the ocean is really my spiritual path, and I'm on a boat. And sometimes I'm on a boat with a rudder, and it has wind, and I know where I'm going. And sometimes that boat loses its rudder, or the wind is pushing me in the wrong direction. And I realize I don't have control over the ocean. It just depends what the waves are doing, what the wind is doing, whatever day it might be, or whatever moment it might be, because the ocean changes every second. So as long as I get to stay in my little boat, and hopefully I have a rudder that actually works, it doesn't always work. Some days it does. It works better than others, and some days it doesn't. But I was so appreciative to see this on the list, because it's really just good for me to hear other people's journeys and stories where they are spiritually, because I don't always get to hear that. So I just wanted to say thank you to you all.
Thank you. Hi, Mary Compulsivita, San Diego. I felt like I should come up and just say one small thing about this. I will qualify as just saying I've been in maintenance for about 3 years now, and I had many, many years of chronic slipping, like way over 20 years of chronic slipping. And I had many years of chronic slipping, like over 20 years. So I knew that dress rehearsal really well. And I struggled a lot with the God issue, too. But one of the most important quotes that helped me a lot, even in my darkest spot, was that place in the Big Book that talks about deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by pomp, circumstance, or worship of other things, but is always there. And so it is with us. So I know that for line by heart, because it became really important to me. And especially when I was in the food there was this small kernel of solace knowing that at some point when I was going to have willingness to put down the food, that there was something essentially good inside of me. And in the days when I really couldn't get out of the food, I wasn't always certain about that. But that line was very consoling to me. And I've heard people say the whole God word, you know, good orderly direction. God knows that we have a lot of that in See How, good orderly direction. You know, our literature's filled with it. Everything's filled with it. So even that was helpful. But just to know that deep down in every man, woman, and child, no matter who walks in here, is the fundamental idea of this thing that we all seek, and that gives us freedom from the food obsession and the compulsion. And that I would have to go deep down within to find it, with the help of the fellowship and my sponsor and good orderly direction itself. The last thing I had to really come for me for being sort of an unbeliever, because I was raised in a very structured religion, was just to believe that my higher power was infinitely good, infinite goodness. And that was really helpful too. I mean, asking that of, sometimes I would say, dear infinite goodness, and I would write a letter to my higher power. If it's infinite goodness, it can't be bad. There's nothing bad about infinite goodness. So hope that's helpful for anyone. That's just what's given me a lot of solace. Thanks.
Do any of the panel members have thoughts that they, I wish I had said that? Add to what they shared?
I can.
Okay, Susan.
You know, here in program we say God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. And, you know, it's like it's been said, it doesn't matter what we call God, higher power, supreme power, the bigger power. But sometimes it could just be something greater than yourself or greater than your fears. One of my sponsors is going through a lot of things, and she right now is angry at her God of her understanding. So now she prays to the power greater than her fears to get her through this. And that's part of it, is that I need to have a power, a higher power of my understanding, because I need to get out of myself and my thoughts. And it doesn't matter what name, or just it doesn't matter, just out of ourselves. So yeah, I had thought of something else, but right now I forgot what it was. Maybe someone else has something else.
And if anybody has questions of the panel members, you're welcome to ask those as well.
I am Patrice, a compulsive eater. I'll sign after I speak. I grew up in the 50s, and my family was part of a religious organization, and we had a higher power that was called God, and it was a very condemning God. I could say it was pre-Vatican II. And this higher power would send you to hell and not forgive you and punish you the rest of your life, and that's how I grew up. And no surprise, I'm in 12-step rooms now. And one of the first things I had to do when I came into a 12-step room is that I knew there was a higher power. But my God was not a kind and loving God. So with sponsor direction, she taught me to reconfigure him, you know, but he was who he was, who I knew. And so through my higher power, I began to, every time I used his name, I would say my loving God. And that is how I transformed the God of my childhood into the God of my understanding today by saying it out loud, by saying, my loving God, my loving God, my loving God. And there were days when I would even call her in outreach calls, and I would get her voicemail, and I'd say, oh, this is Patrice, my old God came back today. You know, I forgot about my loving God today. And just in the practice of doing that, it just reinforced my loving God. And over the years in 12-step, I do attend meetings, and I do my calls, and gosh, my whole community is 12-step, this and another program. But I did find a need in practicing this program to take my spirituality outside of these rooms. So I have joined another religious group, a church, which is not the one that I grew up in, and which kind of reinforces this new loving God that I have. And I have found that it has served me well because, honestly, our program is based off of a religion. So, you know, everything I read in that literature, it's like opening up the big book. It's just amazing to me that, you know, I can find the correlation with our program and with another spiritual organization. And it has helped me with my program because it has developed another community for me of my spirituality that is outside the rooms and that has taught me to practice my spirituality outside of the rooms even more and take my spirituality a step further. So for me, my experience has been, you know, when I was ready and when I had secured my loving God, to just take it outside of the rooms and even continue it even more. So I'm totally grateful because it all happened through the 12-step program. Thank you.
I guess I just was thinking or something that the only reason why I had to find a God was is, you know, and I came from that religion where you didn't get down on your knees either, but I did get down on my knees when I came here, and sometimes I lay down, like, on my stomach and just would lay there and just would say, please, please, you know, because otherwise I was eating. I mean, I couldn't stay abstinent, and I wanted to stop eating. So, I mean, it wasn't because I came in here looking for it, or came in here looking for spirituality. I mean, because maybe, you know, that does turn some people off. It was just that whatever my God was, you know, the one I had when I came in wasn't keeping me abstinent. So, you know, anyway, if anyone has any questions. I texted Carol from sitting here to get me a cup of coffee, and she finally looked at her phone. And she
it just shows I'm paying attention.
Thank you.
I just like to say that, you know, miracles do happen in this program. I did take care of my mother for 12 years. Pretty good. I did a pretty good job. And I have someone in my life who, you know, if it's up to me to get married, so... You know, I never thought that would have happened, and it would not have happened if I weren't here in this program where I finally put it all together and practiced it and, you know, really lived it on a daily basis. So miracles do happen, you know, and more shall be revealed. And I am willing to see I'm willing to see what will be revealed, whatever comes. I'm ready to take what comes.
Hi, I'm Tony, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tony.
Sorry I'm late, but there was another group, another workshop that I wanted to go to also. And I just felt that I'm so glad that I came to this convention. It's my first time. Because I've been in the program for 9 years, and the last 2 years I've been struggling with, I've been mostly abstinent, but struggling with the weighing and the measuring, and, you know, I was doing this, all the steps. I mean, I was doing all the tools, but still having trouble with sticking exactly to the program. And I wanted to come to the convention to see if I could find some answers, and I actually did, because I learned that how aging and being in the program work one with the other, and what I could do to how I could change my food around to lose I don't know if it's going to work. It worked for the speaker in this other workshop, but just to change my food around, because after a certain age, there's the postmenopausal issues or metabolism slowing down and things that are just out of your control. And so I learned what foods have more sugar in them and just things that I hadn't thought about before. So I was really happy about that. And then I left there and came in here and just got a couple of kernels of information from this workshop that I'm really appreciative of. And it's just been a really nice experience being here with all the different people coming from everywhere. And just it's a nice feeling just seeing everyone really happy and being just being really great as a group. It's nice to see. So I am now going to be a big proponent of the annual convention and tell everyone how great it is, and hopefully I can speak on a panel or something next year. Maybe there'll be something interesting to do, but I have a renewed feeling about the program, and my mission is to get into I want to tighten up my food, and I also want to meditate. That's been a goal. It's been very difficult for me to meditate, but somebody in another meeting said, just be quiet and breathe. And I thought, well, I can do that. Not for long, but I can do that. I'm going to just take little baby steps on that, and I feel like the convention has really helped me do that, and I'm really grateful for that. So thank you very much.
I think we're actually going to stop because there is supposed to be another meeting that starts right at 3:45. Thank you, everybody who shared. I was asked to just mention that the phone bridge meet and greet in the hospitality room is going to be from 4:45 to 6, and anyone who's interested, please attend. And let's just end with the serenity prayer, if you will. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I will not mine be done.
Thank you,
everyone.
Thank you.